Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Lee Gabriel. To my left, Justice Bonnie Sutterth. I'm Leanne Dofino. We have two cases set for oral submission on the 130 docket. And it's my understanding that both sides are ready. So if you are, okay. Then if you'll call the case, please, we'll get started. Ready, John? Okay.
As the clerk announced, I'm John Ivey, and I represent the appellate in this case. Your Honors, this case arises out of a tax foreclosure suit. Nothing extraordinary, nothing that doesn't happen, unfortunately, all too often in Tarrant County. But it is the first impression that this court has taken over this particular situation. Your ruling will be informed by the rulings of many of your sister courts, but ultimately this situation creates a unique set of circumstances, which is why we've asked for oral argument today. Back in 2003, a young lady named Kathy Lewis purchased a home here in Tarrant County. Ms. Lewis funded the home through a company called Available Mortgage Funding LLC. This was one of these small mortgage companies that popped up in the early 2000s. MERS, which is the Mortgage Electronic Registration System, Inc., which you hear about a lot in the news, having all kinds of issues across the country, was its nominee. Now, these two companies together filed the necessary paperwork to perfect the mortgage, and it remained without any kind of raising any issue with anybody until 2009, at which point the original mortgage lender assigned its rights and ownership in the property, or its lease on the property, its lien on the property, to Stewardship Funding Number 3, which was a company that purchased a lot of troubled assets, troubled mortgages. Now, that transfer and assignment of rights was duly perfected in the Tarrant County land records. The following year, the taxing authorities, which are appellees in this case, filed a tax suit against Ms. Lewis, and they joined in that lawsuit MERS. Now, MERS, you'll recall, is the nominee for the original mortgage lender, although it was just the nominee, so it wasn't really the proper party, but under Rule 39, ostensibly the reason the taxing authority joined them was because in these cases, if you're going to deprive a party of their rights to the property, you have to make them a part of the underlying litigation. Unfortunately, MERS, nor the company for which it was acting as nominee, had any rights in the property for over a year at that point. The current lien holder of record at the time of the lawsuit was never joined. And in the 2 years that lawsuit went forward, all the way to the time of the tax sale, it was never joined. No notice, no evidence of any kind of notification ever being sent out was ever present. And that's undisputed in this case. Now, once the tax sale took place in 2012 to Mr. Brian Perkle, who's the other appellate in this, or other appellee in this case, Mr. Perkle went off and he perfected his deed of trust, or his purchase of the land with the county land records. He did no further due diligence because ostensibly he operated under the presumption that he had taken the title to the property out from the tax sale free and clear. What he wasn't aware of, and what we've been arguing in the underlying case here, is if the lien holder of record was not a party to the lawsuit, it is clear by a great weight of precedence in the state that the judgment rendered in the lawsuit that would divest everyone else of their ownership interest or their lien interest on the property does not impact the mortgage company that was not made a party and received no notice about the underlying tax suit. Now, this is clear. We cited over a dozen cases that stand for that proposition. Now, when we notified Mr. Perkle, or more importantly, when my client notified Mr. Perkle of their surviving lien interest, Mr. Perkle filed a lawsuit to trespass and quiet the title, a deck action to have a determination made as to the whether or not there was a valid lien and deed that belonged to my client. We filed cross motions for summary judgment. Mr. Perkle asserting his case, ours, asserting that no, because we weren't joined, or more importantly, because our predecessor in interest wasn't joined in the underlying suit, then the title and the rights to the note and the deed of trust continued uninterrupted despite the tax sale. The underlying trial court ruled in Mr. Perkle's favor. That was notwithstanding objections we had to his summary judgment evidence. He made no objection to our summary judgment evidence, yet he carried the day and the court ruled in his favor. Now, that created or gave rise to some additional litigation, and that litigation was going after the taxing authority. We filed a third-party petition at that point asserting that there was an unconstitutional taking of property. If the court in that case is ignoring basically the precedent that existed outside of this particular appellate district, ignoring that case law and saying no, in this particular instance, we're going to say that the lien doesn't survive. The rights to the property held by the mortgage lien holder doesn't survive. They were eliminated. Well, then we have a claim against the taxing authority for an unconstitutional taking. Unfortunately, when the taxing authority was involved, they filed a plea to the jurisdiction asserting lack of standing, which we had assignment of all rights. Our clients had assignment of all rights in the property, so there was no real question as to standing. Governmental immunity, which as a matter of constitutional law, in cases like this, governmental immunity doesn't apply. And they also argued that we were time barred, and that was the one argument that tended to stick. Because the real question at that point was, did we act within the 180 days that we're allowed to act to try to go after the taxing authority for the unconstitutional taking? Our argument being is, well, honestly, there was no unconstitutional taking at that point. Because at the time of the tax sale, the great weight and preponderance of precedent about this issue said our lien survived. It wasn't taken away from us until the trial court said, no, we're not going to go with that. The judge rules that your lien was wiped out.
Do you have any case law that would say that limitations is told until you get a ruling from a trial court on that you can't go after party X, so now you've got a cause of action against party Y? It's a unique argument I've never heard.
Well, and it is a unique argument. And believe me when I say we looked high and low to find anything that came even close to going either way on that. The thing was, we found some that were not even closely analogous, but the best read we could get on it is if you have something that's contrary to what the statutory authority says that's established by a court, it can be argued that your time doesn't toll. But this was, unfortunately, this was in a personal injury case. A line of personal injury cases was as close as we get, and it really wasn't on point. So in answer to your question, Justice, no. We have nothing standing for that authority. The only thing that we have, and it is a unique argument, is under the case law in Texas, our lien was good until the judge said, for whatever reason, that it wasn't good. And so what he ruled basically took us back to the date of the sale and said, from that date, you had 180 days, and since you didn't file anything with regard to an unconstitutional taking, you couldn't. You can't raise that issue now. The thing is, and this is where we run into a little bit of a legal quandary, well, yeah, but if the law says that our lien is still good, why would we sue the taxing authorities in the first place? We have no reason to set aside the judgment, nor do we have any reason to say that there was an unconstitutional taking because the great weight of the law says there was no taking. Actually, your lien interest is still good. It was only when a court of competent jurisdiction said it wasn't that taking actually occurred. Now, the taxing authority, they pleaded the jurisdiction and the trial court was granted. So the taxing authority was out. We had a final hearing on the amount of damages and the trial court awarded attorney's fees on behalf of the appellant Brian Perkle against, or the appellee Brian Perkle against the appellant.
Would you agree that if the court believed that Perkle still should stand liable for the debt, that then the taxing authorities would not have, then your taking cause of action would go away. You couldn't have both.
Frankly, I don't think we even get there because, as you just pointed out, if the court finds that we should have prevailed in summary judgment, in other words, that our legal case was sound and we should have prevailed, the trial court just got it wrong this time, then we don't even reach that issue. But that, and the reason we filed that third-party petition was because at that point we had no other recourse. Property rights had been taken, and they were either taken at the time of the tax sale by the taxing authority, who sold the property without notifying us, or our lien survived. We went with what we were faced with. But I agree. I think that becomes a moot issue if you first look at whether or not the lien survived the original sale. Under Texas Rule Civil Procedure 39, a party must be joined into a legal action if that action is going to impact their rights to property. There are, I say, we looked at least a dozen cases that we cited in our briefing that goes directly along with that in this type of scenario. If the mortgage lien holder of record, and this isn't secret stuff, it's in there in the county land records. In order for a lien holder to perfect its lien rights, it must file it in the public records. So it would have been easy enough to find that. Unfortunately, in this particular case, it was the previous lien holder that hadn't, well, the previous lien holder's nominee that hadn't had any rights in the property for over a year. But that mistake raises an issue for my client as well. When purchasing these mortgages, if something had happened, some legal action had happened in the state that divested the previous owner of the lien of their rights in the property, my client can force them to purchase it back because the sale would at that point be invalid. They've assigned and sold to us rights that they didn't have because they've been divested of it. But in this case, there was no recourse because the previous lien holder had not received notice. So we can't force them to buy that lien back or buy that mortgage back. We're sitting there holding a deed of trust mortgage and a note as to this property. And the further problem that we had with the summary judgment is that it not only said you are no longer going to have a valid lien on this property. It was divested at the time of the tax sale. What was also taken away from my client was the note. Now understand this. Kathy Lewis, the young lady that purchased the property back in 2003, that note was an agreement, a promise to pay money that stands separate and apart from the deed of trust, which creates the lien instrument. That note is simply a contract, a promise to pay money to the lender or its assignees that loaned her the money. She wasn't party to the lawsuit. Mr. Perkle, the appellee, had no standing to even ask that note be extinguished. Yet the trial court did so. It said that the lien was no good, and it said that the note is void and of no effect. Now, the initial ruling that the lien was extinguished at the time of the tax sale, it's taken several courts of appeals have wrapped their brains around that whole thing, exactly how far to take that, because quite frankly the presumption is, and it's statutory, the presumption is when you purchase a piece of real property at a tax sale, you take it free and clear of any and all encumbrances. The carve out on that's been created by the courts is, but the lien holder of record has to be joined into that lawsuit in order to deprive it of those rights in the property.
Did you ask at the trial court or raise the issue at the trial court that Perkle had no standing to ask that the note be extinguished?
We filed a motion to reconsider the motion for summary judgment after it was denied, and we did raise that issue. Yes, Justice. The final issue here, quite frankly, I don't think we, as the Justice pointed out, I don't think that we get to the issue of the third-party petition against the taxing authorities. Quite frankly, it was we have no other recourse based on the judge's ruling. It creates this cause of action. We have to pursue it. But I don't think we get there. I think going back and correcting or taking issue with the original motion for summary judgment And mind you, the appellant's motion for summary judgment, none of the evidence that was attached to it, the motion itself, nothing was objected to. It was all admitted, and it all lays out very clearly the chain of ownership and the lien interest in that property. And that's not been disputed. The underlying facts of the case haven't been disputed this entire time. It has only been the law and how it applies to this case. And it's unusual. I've not seen any other case that's been filed in any of the other appellate courts that create this situation where, well, we either get to enforce our lien interest or we should be able to go after the taxing authority deprived of us our lien interest. Unfortunately, we don't really have any guidance, but I don't think you get there. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. Okay, Alice.
May it please the court. I represent Brian Perkle, who's a fairly young man who purchased property at a tax sale. He was relying on the property tax code that says quite clearly that a property tax suit and sale voids any existing liens against the property and that he takes that property free and clear of any liens. The property tax code is quite specific as to that. There, if you look at the code, that's exactly what it says. It does not carve out any exceptions as to notice. And if we're looking at rules of construction, that's one of the things we need to consider. There's the general rule about proper notice set out in the rules of civil procedure, but there's a very specific provision in the property tax code regarding the ability of a tax sale purchaser to rely on their title. This case is quite unusual in several respects, but to me the most unusual basis of this particular case is the fact that the appellant has taken the position that their lien simply survived the tax sale. It was not necessary for them to comply with the tax code. It was not necessary for them to make a collateral attack on the judgment. They simply could sit back, relax, and then seek their lien against the property and against Mr. Perkle. In fact, what brought us to the underlying lawsuit was not the tax sale. It was not them bringing suit to attack the judgment in the property tax sale. In fact, what it was is they went forward and listed this property for foreclosure pursuant to their deed of trust that they claimed simply survived without the necessity of attacking the sale. There's nothing in the law that they have cited that says that that is the correct method. They cite to Security State Bank, but Security State Bank does not stand for the proposition for which they state it does. Specifically, in Security State Bank held the lien at the time that the tax sale existed. They held the lien at the time that the tax judgment. They held the lien at the time of the tax original tax suit. They were there and involved throughout the case. The reason this case can be distinguished is American Home Preservation Fund took this lien after the tax sale. They're wanting to argue lack of notice, but they're not entitled to that argument.
Don't they just stand in the shoes of the predecessor?
I don't believe that they do, Your Honor.
Do you have any case law to support that?
I do. I think that the Security State Bank itself says that. Security State Bank says that the reason that they are finding that it was a mistake by the underlying court to render a motion for summary judgment is because Security State Bank was an existing lien holder at the time of the tax suit and the tax sale. They list a load of cases that have been cited by the taxing authorities and specifically distinguish Security State Bank on the basis that they were an existing lien holder. And the reason that that becomes important has to do with the appellant's notice argument. In their notice argument, what they're saying is, we did not receive notice. But that's not correct. They at least had constructive notice because the deed from the sheriff's sale was on file at the time that they acquired their lien. They had constructive notice because that lien was on file. Now they're wanting to say we get to argue the due process rights of our antecedent in interest, I guess. We get to argue their lack of notice, even though we had the ability to look at the notice of the fact that the tax sale. They basically are asking to be rewarded for their lien surviving, because what we're in the position of now is if SF3 had been notified of the tax sale, they would have had certain rights. Those rights, though, don't include not having to pay the property taxes. They don't include not having to make a deposit. They had certain duties, and they had the duty, even if it had been their lien, they had the duty to attack that judgment. In Security State Bank, the judgment was actually being attacked. Security State Bank wasn't arguing our lien simply survives, which is what the appellant is arguing. Security State Bank said we didn't have actual notice, and because of that, we were a little dilatory in making the required deposit into the registry of the court. They never were saying our lien simply survived, and we're entitled to go forth and foreclose on the lien. They were actually attacking the validity of the judgment. That's not what the appellant is arguing. The appellant is not arguing the lack of judgment. In fact, they're saying that tax suit judgment was absolutely valid. There wasn't a problem with the tax suit judgment, and because there's not a problem with that tax suit judgment, our lien survives. And they get rewarded for acquiring a lien that was in default at the time that they acquired it. They get rewarded for not taking any due diligence on their own to say there was an intervening tax suit. They had cited in their original brief to a Fifth Circuit case that basically said the same thing as Security State Bank, and that is you can't lay back and not meet the statutory requirements of attacking this judgment. You must do so in a timely manner, and you must comply with those statutes. There is language within each of those cases that says, absent notice to the lien holder, the lien survives. But that is taking that language out of context and is not accurate as to what the actual rulings by those courts were. Two of the cases that were cited in the Security State Bank case were the Murphy Properties case and the Mennonite Board of, I don't remember what they're the board of, but the Mennonite Board case. And each of those cases predate the property tax code. The property tax code went into effect after Murphy. And it is our argument that in part the reason the property tax code was enacted was so that property tax sale purchasers would have some security as to the validity of their title and the clarity of their title at the time that it was acquired. It did not deprive lien holders of their rights. It gave them a roadmap as to what they must do in order to attack that judgment. They must make a deposit. They must bring suit to attack that judgment. Nothing says we can lay back and then wait, and then we can foreclose on the lien that we acquired at the time that was in default when property taxes hadn't been paid. And we don't have to pay any property taxes, even though the property tax liens were superior to ours. None of the cases say that.
I have a question. Is it your position that if stewardship hadn't conveyed to American, that stewardship would have been able to attack the sale? They were not noticed of in the lawsuit. They got no notice of the lawsuit, weren't a party to the lawsuit. And is it your position that it was the transfer between stewardship and American that causes American to be divested of that property right? Because stewardship had it. They didn't get notice. And under Security State Bank, they would still have a valid lien in that carve-out. So are you saying it was the transfer that caused this, the transfer after the sale that was the the moment at which they lost their ability to?
Not exactly, Your Honor. There's actually two parts to that question. The first is, what if Security State Bank had been notified, or say they had not been notified, what would their duty have been after the property was sold at the tax sale? And they don't get relieved of the duty to attack the judgment. They have to attack that judgment. Security State Bank says, we're allowing you to attack this judgment. It doesn't say the lien simply survives. It says you get to attack the judgment. It doesn't say the lien simply survives. So what would happen is that Security Funding would have had the right to attack the tax sale. So it's not the, it is not just the fact that American Home Preservation got the lien after the tax sale. It's first the fact that they did not make an attack on the judgment and they did not comply with those statutory requirements. That's the first thing. And the second thing is they're trying to argue due process rights that don't belong to them.
That was my question.
Right. Their due process.
Stewardship owned it at the time the lawsuit was filed and at the time of the sale.
Yes.
And so American didn't have any property rights.
Correct.
Until after the property had already been sold.
And what property rights could they have acquired? Security Funding did not attack the tax judgment. If Security Funding had attacked the tax judgment, then they may have been able to sell the lien validly, but they didn't attack the judgment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Nick?
May it please the Court, my name is Nick Nicholas, and I represent the Tarrant County Appellees. I think one of the issues that has come to the forefront here today is that the only issue involving my clients is whether the trial court properly granted the plea to the jurisdiction. That issue is independent of any other issue here or the outcome of that issue. So we look simply to the trial court's order, what the trial court did, and what the case law is. And in this case, the trial court on pages 604 and 605 of the clerk's record, volume 2, set forth seven separate findings of facts and conclusions of law to support his decision that the taxing authorities were entitled to have their plea to the jurisdiction granted. Basically those reasons came down to three general categories. One, because the appellant did not have standing to assert its taking claims and its PRPRPA claim, which is a shorthand way of saying Private Right Protection Act claim. The second reason is that the appellant did not file its petition within the jurisdictionally required time period. And finally, that the Tarrant County Appellees have and had governmental immunity. In regards to the taking claim, one of the additions to the general rule about an unconstitutional taking claim is that the plaintiff must have a vested property right at the time of the taking. In this case, the act that's alleged to be the taking was the failure to join SF3 in the lawsuit. That occurred before the tax final judgment. It occurred before the tax sale. It occurred before the tax sale deed being recorded in the real property records. And it occurred before American homeowners acquired any interest in the property. They did not acquire any interest until October 31st, 2012. And the tax sale judgment was August 21st, 2012. Additionally, on the PRPA claim, that statute is Texas Government Code 2007.002, and subsection 2 requires that the plaintiff be an owner at the time of the taking. That ruling is also contained in City of Houston versus Guthrie at 332 Southwest 3rd 588. Again, here the appellant did not own any interest at the time of the alleged taking. The trial court also found that the appellants did not file the PRPRPA claim timely because that statute requires that it be filed within 180 days of the owner knowing or should know that a government's action might affect its right or interest in the property. And in this case, the appellant actually wrote a letter on January 3rd, 2013 to the Tarrant County appellees saying that you might have affected our rights by this and then did not file suit for another 400 days. So under the trial court found that under State v. British Petroleum and Hidalgo versus Dyer, the petition was not timely filed. In regards to the governmental immunity, unquestionably, the Tarrant County appellees are governmental units. The collection and assessment of taxes is a government function. Immunity bars all suits unless the governmental entities waive immunity or consent to suit. And the Texas Tort Claims Act provides that to get around that, to be able to sue the governmental entity, you have to either prove that the legislature waived government immunity for that claim, or B, established by reference to an express statute or legislative permission that the entity has consented to the suit. In this case, there is no evidence that the Tarrant County appellees waived their immunity or consented to the suit. On its own, the trial court clearly had the authority to grant the plea to the jurisdiction, and we would ask that that order be affirmed in its entirety.
Questions? Any questions?
Thank you. John, is there rebuttal?
There was a couple of points I wanted to clarify in some of the argument that was made. First, there's no evidence that was presented at the trial court level at all indicating that either the appellant or its predecessor in interest to the property ever received any kind of notice. So to the extent that that was unclear, it's in the briefing, it's uncontested that no notice was received by either our predecessor in interest, who was lien holder of record at the time of the suit and the foreclosure sale, or to my client at the time that they took the assignment of the lien interest in the property.
The only notice that I heard them discuss in their argument was their argument that you had constructive notice. I mean, you say there's nothing secret, there's these deed records, so they had notice of SF3's interest in the property when the tax suit was filed. So equally, you had notice of the tax sale deed when you acquired your client's interest from SF3, correct?
You're absolutely right, but the burden that goes with that is a little bit different. As Your Honor is well aware, the burden of satisfying the due process rights of any litigant or non-litigant whose property rights you're going to attack through, in this particular case, a tax sale. The burden is on the plaintiff, in this case the taxing authorities, to notify them that they are at risk, that their property rights are at peril. Now, Your Honor raises a good point. Well, wait a minute. Your client, when they were looking at purchasing this portfolio of mortgages and located in Tarrant County, they had the ability to go and look up every single one of those mortgages and make sure that there hadn't been an ensuing tax suit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you're right. They had the ability, but there's nothing in the law that requires them to do so. If their contractual relationship with the company from whom they're purchasing these mortgages allows them recourse to go back and force these mortgages back on that company, they may have some recourse that way. But there's an absolute requirement on the plaintiff in these cases to make sure that they have satisfied the statutory due process rights. And if they're mixing that, you know, sort of, well, yeah, but they have the ability to do it too. They haven't cited in their briefing nor in their argument any legal authority that says that that is an absolute. Could my client have looked up all whatever hundred of these mortgages and verified that? I can't say they couldn't have, but I haven't found a single legal obligation or requirement that even so much as suggests that they should. Whereas the taxing authority's obligation is constitutional. It is absolutely mandated. Now,
It's mandated as to the title holder before you. You had no ownership interest at the time. So how can you assert that right at this point?
Well, it is also uncontested in the underlying lawsuit, and we presented evidence to the trial court to show that we took assignment of all rights that our predecessor in interest had. Based on the case law that we've cited to the court that say, well, yeah, your lien and your rights all survive the tax sale, to think that, well, but in this case, you can't transfer those rights. You can't legally transfer the rights that you, our predecessor in interest mortgage company, as soon as you transfer those, it may harm the rights of the person that you're assigning them to. Because if they have rights, legal rights to property or in property, such as a mortgage lien, then they have to be able to transfer that. Otherwise, then we're imposing in the law some restriction on the transfer of rights and property. That doesn't exist. It's an interesting argument. Hey, wait a minute, this didn't happen. The process, due process rights weren't violated as against the appellant. They were violated as against the appellant's predecessor in interest. But if the predecessor in interest assigned the appellant all of its rights in that property, and the courts say, the case law says, those rights survive the tax sale, there's no authority that's been cited in any of the briefing that says, well, gosh, that means that that assignment is somehow encumbered or invalid. All the evidence that was presented at the trial court level shows it was a valid assignment. Filed a record in the county land records. As to the point that Ms. Bauer was making about the statutory arguments, and I see I'm out of time. So unless you have questions about it, I'm done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming here to argue. Nick, you traveled a long way, but Dallas is a long way too, and we appreciate you being here. Obviously, we had a lot of questions, so we appreciate your argument. Your case is submitted.